Special Committee on Military and Veterans Affairs to order at 10:15. And if our secretary could please give the roll call.
Representative Ryan?
Here.
Representative Todd?
Here.
Representative
Holder? Here.
Representative Foster?
Here.
Representative Jewell?
Yes.
Representative
Nicolai?
Chairwoman
Messick? Here. Thank you. Well, good morning and welcome. This is our very first meeting here for the 20th legislative session. And Norm, if you want to scoot up here, would you like to join us at the table?
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
All right. Representative Roepberg here. And today on the agenda, we're just going to have an overview from General Lestenkopf and his staff on the DMVA. And if committee members here have any opening comments or remarks, you can do so. And I'm really honored to be able to work with all of you here. And I have two past chairmen here, one on my right and one on my left. So I think we're in really good shape. So do you have any comments you'd like to make before we invite General Lestenkopf up to the table? None?
No, other than it's a pleasure to hear from the general. I always enjoy his company, especially on the golf course.
Okay, well, that's great. It's a good way to open up a meeting. So at this time, we'll invite General Lestenkopf to give us his overview on the military and veterans affairs.
Thank you very much, Madam Chairman.
Thank you.
Indeed, a pleasure to be here before you today and before the Military Committee, a very important committee in my world. First, let me introduce some of the people we have here. Carol Carroll, who's our Administrative Director, not only for our department, but for DNR. As you know, we've kind of combined our administrative services for efficiencies in government, and that's working out very well. Nico Buss is our budget person, again, for both of the departments. Gary Pedersen is our Youth Challenge Director, and he will be here to answer any detailed questions you may have about that program. Jim Chase is my special director for Special Affairs. Anybody else? We have a military conference beginning tomorrow, which we've invited you and the committee members to participate, and we're looking forward to that. We're interested in your views about the department. So that's tomorrow afternoon. First, let me begin by saying that I wanted to cover some of the highlights of the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. We are the largest department in state government. We have about 4,500 employees. Some of these people are part-time, and we're located in 76 communities throughout Alaska. We'd like to say also that, 34% of the department consists of minorities, Alaska Natives. About 22% of our Air Guard consists of females. I mention these facts because I think that the military and the National Guard mirrors and is the lead in how our society and our country changes by introducing minorities and by introducing females into the force. We consider ourselves to be a very important basic industry, leveraging over $150 million annually from the federal government. We look at the Guard and our department as an investment center, generating hundreds of millions of dollars and providing important stabilizing infusion of funds into communities throughout Alaska. Our federal funds amount to about $153.9 million, and which is leveraged by about 7.4 million of state funds. In the past briefings that I've had before the committee, I've normally concentrated on the military aspect of our department, and that's the important part. But this time I kind of wanted to concentrate on the economic value of the department and what it does to Alaska. We feel that we add significant value to the nation, to the state, and to our communities, and to the Alaskan people. The Army and Air Guard perform vital, real-world operational missions as an integral part of our national military defense forces. Our Division of Emergency Services provides an essential system for disaster planning, recovery, mitigation, and prevention. Planning here, again, becomes very, very important, especially here in Alaska, where we have large parts of our state in an unorganized status. The Guard is one of Alaska's premier leadership, professional, and technical and vocational training institutions, improving career and job skills for both urban and for rural Alaskans. Our Youth Corps Challenge Program, which I'll talk about a little more in a little while, is the centerpiece of the Governor's Children and Youth Task Force Solutions for at-risk youth. The Army and Air Guard rescue units saved 110 civilians during 1996 while training for their wartime missions. And I might add here, just in the past 3 weeks, we've had some harrowing rescue operations up near the mountain at Mount McKinley and out in the periphery on the ice. So we're very proud of the work that they do. Our Guard armories throughout Alaska serve as a multi-purpose community facilities. And finally, the Guard carries on a proud tradition of service to Alaskans that date to World War II and the Eskimo Scouts. The department is organized what I'd like to see several departments that are line departments, like the Army Guard, the Air Guard, the Division of Emergency Services, and those are our line divisions that we have in the department. In the state side of the house, we have some support divisions like our admin division, our facilities division, which maintains all the facilities we have throughout the state. Our federal support staff divisions include our property and fiscal office that is the accountable federal office in the state for all federal property. We have a personnel office, our IG, our EEO, and our JAG offices are all located within that federal staff support division. Then finally, we have special programs that we run, like the Youth Corps program, our vets, our Naval Militia organization that we have. We have the State Defense Force, and finally, our vets, special office for veterans. In the organizational chart that you see there on your handout, I wanted to mention the counter drug program just a little bit. We run about a $3 million counter drug program, which is all federally funded in Alaska. We participated, I think, with about 45,000 youths last year in teaching the dangers of drug use, where we participate in schools with other agencies about the dangers of drugs. We dealt with about 3,000 adults with the same type of program. And finally, working with civil authorities, we participated in the capture of about $64 million worth of drugs from the streets of Alaska last year in our counter-drug program. I wanted to talk just a moment about the Guard payroll impact that we have in Alaska. Our total payroll that we have, just payroll, not other operations, comes to about $90.2 million that you see in the chart. using the gross economic multiplier of 2.27, we're looking at about $204 million that is generated just in payrolls through the GUARD programs in the state. I consider the department to be a truly an investment center for Alaska. It does this beginning with the federal mission that we have for our military units, because this is the basis for how we bring in the federal dollar, the organization that connects into the state missions that we have, the emergency responses that we do on state missions, helping Alaskan people. We need state support, and that's the reason why we always come before you for the important part that you have in funding the department. And I think, again, here, when state support appears strong, it makes my job easier at the Washington level in lobbying for the better units that we want for Alaska. This benefits the nation in the long run, and, of course, it benefits Alaskans. So, again, I look at DMVA as an investment center in the state of Alaska. Further, this partnership for Alaska supports the governor's priorities and yours, I'm sure, for jobs, for economic development, for children and education, for healthy and safe communities, and for, of course, our philosophy of budget discipline. I know that you and the administration are interested in supporting basic industries in Alaska. And let me quote Neil Fried, and I used this before some other committees. Neil, of course, is from the Department of Labor. And speaking of Alaska industries and jobs, had this to say, that military money is worth more to the state because it comes from the outside. It's bringing new cash, new economic activity into the economy. The rest of America is paying us to help defend them. In a sense, we are profiting from that. We're an exporter of defense. We don't make stuff like tanks. We export protection. So Neil said that about considering the military dollar as a kind of a basic industry. I wanted to also to touch upon if we were a private company, if our department were a private sector employer, this is how we would compare. We have approximately 4,200 employees compared to CARS at 3,200, Providence Hospital at 1,900, ARCO at 1,900, Fred Meyers at 1,700, VCO at 1,500, Walmart at 1,200, and Alaska Airlines at 1,200. I wanted to touch upon Arctic Care, because I don't have it here, I don't believe, in your handouts. But Arctic Care has been a military operation that we've been running here going on the third year, which will begin in another 2 weeks. It is reserve units, primarily Marine reserve units working with the National Guard, that have come in with medical teams into the villages in the Nana area. Last year and the year before, will be coming into the Bethel area this year. But they come into the villages and provide medical assistance, physicals, dental care examinations, and so forth. Over 4,000 villagers have been treated during the past 2 years by this Arctic Care program. This is a special program that emanates out of the Department of Defense, which must connect to the unit's military mission. It must enhance the basic military role of that unit. And of course, medical units find this to be an enhanced training environment, coming into remote areas of Alaska and performing these type of physicals and dental work in a remote area is good training for them. But I think the big benefit to us, it helps many of our rural citizens that otherwise would probably be a long time before they got that care. Connected to Arctic Care is Arctic Engineer. Again, working with reserve guard units, we have been able to do some engineering work, and probably the big one has been the expeditionary airstrip that went into Noorvik this past summer. As you know, the regular airstrip at Noorvik was eroding into the river, and I think on the state airport plans, it was about 3 or 4 years down the pike before they could get another new airstrip. So the military, primarily the Marine Engineering Unit, came in here last summer and built an expeditionary airstrip that's being used now, and will be retired when the regular airstrip is built in the future. The big project on our horizon, which will begin this summer, is the construction of a 14-mile road at Annette Island on the reservation Metlakatla. This road will begin from the community to a point 14 miles away, which will become their ferry terminal and connect the community to the outside world through the state ferry system. So that's going to be a three-year project using military and guard and it'll be a guard engineer brigade that will come in from Missouri that will be doing that work over a three-year period. So that's been a very good program. In closing this kind of overview, I just kind of wanted to say that I have probably three major areas that I'm kind of concerned about, focused about for the coming year. Youth Corps is a big one on my screen. As you know, the Youth Challenge Program, many of you have been briefed, I know personally, at the campus at Camp Carroll on the program. That authorization initially was a three-year authorization by Congress to run that program, a pilot program that will expire this fiscal year 97. We need authorization badly. I was back in Washington this past week and up on the Hill and talking in the Defense Department. The Defense Department is supporting at the present time a reauthorization of the program. And towards that end, they have placed $20 million as a placeholder in the budget, in the President's budget that was just delivered last week, to work towards that end. We understand that our problems may lie in the House, in the U.S. House. The Senate appears to be very supportive of continuing the program. Trent Lott came and spoke to us, and of course, as you know, he's the majority leader, and was very, very supportive of continuing the authorization, reauthorization, and the appropriations that would support that authorization. We are sending, and I'm kind of orchestrating with 15 other states from Alaska, sending a letter to the four appropriate committees in the House and the Senate supporting a reauthorization legislation. So this is something that we're going to be continuing to work with almost on a kind of a weekly basis to ensure that first we get the authorization, we get the appropriations. The second area that I'm kind of concerned about is that I have a division within the department, the Army Division, our largest division of over 2,000 people, that is presently without a division director, just not authorized. And we're working to get that authorized during this session so that we can kind of look at funding and future funding for it. Because we have no full-time division director, I find my time used up a lot with that division, and it's an important division within our department. Then finally, the what we call the QDR, the Quadrennial Defense Review, which was mandated by Congress, and it is a review that is now taking place within the Defense Department, and that is going to review the entire military community of America for the next 4 or 5 years. And while we have had past reviews before, like the bottoms-up review and the baseline review before that, this one here is very significant because it is truly going to look at the America's military forces based on the post-Cold War world. We've had some time now since the Cold War ended, and we are able probably more to look very clearly at the type of force America requires for the future. Another new twist to this whole review is that the requirement to establish a national defense panel. This consists of civilians that will sit down and review the QDR and will make recommendations to the Congress and to the President as to how America's military forces will look like. That will probably have a big impact on what the Guard will look like in America, what the reserves will look like, and what the active forces will look like. We could end up with a small active component and large reserve components. That's one way. And you have to keep in mind that America is indeed a militia nation. You know, our founding fathers did not want a large standing army. And we have had a large standing army since the Cold War, and almost an aberration in America. So this QDR will probably be thinking about those things, and the National Defense Panel certainly will probably be thinking about the philosophical status and setting of America in a as a militia nation. So those are the three big things that will be before us, I think, in the department for the coming year.
Okay, does that wrap up your overview?
Yes, it has.
All right, thank you, General Lestenkopf. Representative Foster?
Yeah, I just wanted to mention, over the years, this committee wasn't formed until 1991. There was no standing military committee, as you know, prior to that, and even now the Senate doesn't have a committee like this, so it's like a forum for your commission, and I appreciate your time. You know, Representative Mulder and myself the other day looked at the Know Thy Legislator biographies. We've got 10 new members of the House and Senate out of 60 this year. And in previous years, approximately 5 to 7 members of the House, for example, have been veterans of the National Guard or the Army or Air Force or other branches. This year there's 11. 4 of them are veterans of foreign wars. Half of this committee here are veterans. So with 11 now, and I know the previous 2 years, and I forgot what it was for this year, there was none in the Senate that were Army veterans, for example, or military veterans. 4 Vietnam veterans in the House. No Korean War, such as yourself, veterans, or World War II. Although I think Terry Martin was a Civil War veteran. But anyway, I only say this because I think there's more interest in your department now than there has been for the last 15 or 20 years, and I know all of us look forward to working with you.
Very good. Well, thank you very much.
Your Representative Ryan.
Yes, General, first question I have is, how do I get a headquarters company stationed in my district? But following on beyond that, you mentioned this director for the Army National Guard. What kind of position is that? Is that a 26, 28, or what are we looking
at? It's a 26, yeah, state 26.
Why is that in the governor's budget this year? Okay, why was it deleted previously? Is that legislative action or administrative?
I don't know. I think that maybe the position was deleted, and I don't know the reason why, some years ago. And one of my predecessors, and I don't know which one, but there was probably a budget-cutting exercise that maybe the state went through or whatnot, but that position was deleted. And I think they were trying to rely on some federal positions that, since then, you know, have been eliminated also in a kind of a general downsizing. So it's probably because of that it's become more crucial now to our management scheme.
Okay, Representative Mulder.
As a partial answer to the question too, Joe, a few years back, General Tom Carroll wore several hats within the Guard, and this was one of the hats he did wear. And when his plane went down, it left a big void, I mean, not only from the people who were with him, but also from the standpoint that he was assuming several functions, which in the end proved that it took two or three people to replace, because he was carrying on that many different functions, and this was one of them.
Yeah.
So that's why it was deleted as a specific position, because Tom was able to do more things than one.
Representative Foster.
Yeah, could you briefly touch on special affairs? You said you had special affairs, so that was your forte? Yeah.
Well, I was brought on in August of 95 to basically follow up on the Board of Inquiry to ensure that all the recommendations that came out of it were implemented. And I put together a program to ensure that was done. I made a final report last year on the activities. And then from that point on, we changed a lot of the things that were still pending in the Board of Inquiry. We sunsetted that title and then incorporated those items that were not completed to our continuous quality plan. So right now, we have a quality plan that's ongoing that we keep up to speed with in order to make sure that we have continuous quality improvement.
Can you please state your name and affiliation just for the record?
My name is Jim Chase, and my title is Special Assistant to the General.
Thanks. Representative Joel, I think, had his hand up.
Yeah, further question. Joel, you and I have talked.
Representative Ryan, recognizing Representative Joel, I think he...
Thank you, Madam Chair.
...move back to you in a moment.
I was wondering about the BRAC impact in rural Alaska. And I saw the listing of all the villages and was wondering, and the reductions there, what was the reasons for those reductions?
Madam Chairman, it came about, I think, because of a number of changing situations and conditions. Number one, probably and the biggest one, was that at a point in time in the past, in the 80s, the Guard was overstructured. It created a larger force than what the population really could support in Alaska. We do pretty well, by the way, comparatively speaking, of how many people we have in the Guard based on our population. You know, we're a very, very small state, but we do very well. But we were overstructured. I think right now, in the Army side, just looking at the Army side, our strength requirement is about 2,200. I think that's our structured number. Back in the 80s, it was 3,900, 38 or 3,900. So there was a big difference there. We were trying to chew off too much. So in recognition of that, units had to be eliminated and downsized. That was one. The other situation that came into being was that based on the experiences of the Gulf War, where units were mobilized and we found standards to be just a little different than the reserve components, both reserve and the Guard, there was instituted by the Defense Department different standards. You had to adhere to little different standards than what we had before. Those standards hit us pretty hard in Alaska. We still have some waivers in place, like education waivers and so forth, especially with our scout units. But they hit us pretty hard, and that had an impact on our force. The final piece that came into being was drug testing. And we all have to remember just a few years ago that marijuana was legal in the state. And when we went into drug testing, we ran into problems and eliminated a lot of people and eliminated units. So, you know, those three events had a kind of a lasting impact on us. I might say we drug test 42% of the force, the Army force, today. And the results that are coming back are very, very encouraging. If we tested 42% of the force 4 years ago, the picture would have been grim. But this time, the picture is improving and things are getting better. The people know that they're going to be tested and they have to participate in a drug-free force. It's going to make a lot of difference, and it's making a lot of difference. So that's a good encouragement on that thing.
Follow up if I may.
Yes, please.
Once a person has committed that sin and is caught, is there a forgiveness? Is there a time period at some point when that person could get retested and then potentially reinstated?
It's a very good point that's being raised here, and we don't. If you test positive and you're an E4, you're, say, not a sergeant yet, and below, we can keep you on provided that we test you periodically and you're clean. I think it's for a year, and we can rehab you and remain a member of the force. If you're an E5 and above, you're a buck sergeant or above, you're an NCO, once you're test positive, you're out. And we probably will not be able to bring you in again. Remember again here, we're dealing with a volunteer army where sometimes there's a waiting list to get in. And they want only the best, so the standards are high, and they want you to maintain the high standards.
To that point, Madam Chairman, General, what's the washout rate? I remember visiting with your predecessor, General Cox, about the extremely high number or high level of washout when they first come in terms of testing. What percentage tests positive?
Do you have that number?
Do you mind coming forward to the table, please, so others can hear you on the teleconference?
Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Jim Chase again. The recruiters report that out of every 10 people that they ask the question, some of them can't answer the positive, or do answer the positive, yes, I have taken drugs in the recent past. And so our inventory of possible people to bring into the force is being very narrowed by the rampant use of drugs throughout the state.
That was really the point I wanted to make, Madam Chairman, is that to give everybody in the committee an idea of the problem that the Guard is up against in rural Alaska. When you withdraw 70% of the eligible population that's even interested, not the eligible population, but the population that's interested, you're looking at a fairly narrow slice of the pie that remains.
To that point, I may have to...
Yes.
For those that get the thumb, it just seems that, you know, if a person, especially some of those young people that you're talking about, saw that there was a way that somebody committed this sin was given the opportunity to come back in, it provides them with some incentive maybe to clean up their act so that they could see that. But when what they're seeing is, and the standard is, here's this person, he's done it wrong, and he's never going to be able to get back in the fold for it, it's kind of what the use. And I just wonder if that is something that's been taken into...
Madam Chairman, as far as I know, my answer was correct, that once you test positive and you're discharged, you will probably not come back in. I'm going to check into that, though, to make sure that my answer is indeed correct. The reserve components, which includes the Guard and the Reserve, do not have a rehab program like the active Army has or the active services have. You test positive in the active service, E4 and below. I mean, there's programs there that are going to assist you. In the reserve components, apparently they probably depend on the community and the support systems that you have within your state to do that sort of work. So we get no funding for that. It's unfortunate. but we do not get funding for that.
Representative Nicolai.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, I read an article where they said that the persons enlisting in armed forces is down, is decreased, and it's the lowest as has been in years past. And how has that impacted Alaska?
You know, it's funny, but I think that we kind of lag. You're right, on the national level, the active recruitment roles are low, and it seems to be falling. Here in Alaska, it's been steady, and even, say, in southeastern Alaska here has been high. We've been doing very well in recruiting in southeastern Alaska. But there seems to be always a lag with the kind of the active picture. We're usually about 6 months to a year behind. Whether that will happen to us in the near future, I'm not sure. But it has really not impacted us yet as far as Guard recruitment is concerned here in the state. But you're right, that's the national report that I see also for the active forces.
Would there be any questions for Carol or for Gary Patterson regarding the any other issues? Because after we're done with this overview, we're going to be taking up the Senate resolution, Joint Resolution 7, that's funding the Alaska Youth Corps Challenge Program. So, Representative Nicolai.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just one more question.
Sure.
The Chair, the question I have is, in recent years or earlier, when a person committed a misdemeanor, then sometimes they were sentenced to joining the armed forces. Do you remember those years? And what do you think of if the state reinstated that law?
You're exactly right. I think that, you know, for many years in America, you know, if you had the minor offense and whatnot, it was usually the judge would say, you want to go to jail or you want to go into service. And it was very successful in many, many cases. I mean, there are many successful people in America that went through that route. Not anymore, because the state of Alaska really has no influence in the matter, because we enlist people in the federal service. And right now the requirements are getting stiffer and stiffer. I mean, even minor offenses, we can't even touch you. And this is a big concern to us in Village, Alaska, because you have a lot of people up there that have bumped into the law and have acquired minor offenses and so forth, and they're just, you write them off. That's probably what your question is related to. There's nothing we can do unless federal regulations were changed to allow us to do that. Probably the closest thing that we have to this is our challenge program. Our challenge program almost functions in that way which you describe, where young people with minor offenses were able to come into the military service. Now we're able to direct them, you know, into our youth programs and so forth, even before they get into major trouble.
Do you have a follow-up?
Yeah, just a follow-up question, Madam Chair. What are some of those minor offenses that prohibit the youth from joining the armed forces?
God, I wish I had our lawyer here.
Any drug offense.
Pardon?
Any drug
offense. Drug offense would be one, which there's a lot of that.
Mm-hmm. Other felonies.
Felonies? Or felonies, certainly, you're not going to participate, but probably the big one would be drugs.
Just a fall.
Okay.
Would minor consuming be one of those offenses? Or does it not fit under the category?
Mm-hmm. Gary? It would?
In MCA, depending on
the size. Can you come up to the table again, please? Shuffling around here, we need to be able to catch you on the mic there, so if you could.
Yeah. Yes, ma'am, Chair. Please. Gary Peterson, Director at the Youth Corps. With the number of individuals from the program that do enlist, I work with the recruiters regularly. Each of the services does have different rules. Currently, the Air Force is the most stringent. The Department of the Navy is the least. Minor consuming alcohol will preclude your enlistment into the Air Force. It will currently put you on a waiver status for the Army and for the Department of the Navy. The Department of the Navy will look at you. The Army currently will not. Each is different. Three moving traffic violations in a 90-day period. You have to go into a suspense status for 180 days with no further traffic violations, just to enlist, which obviously doesn't impact Bush, Alaska, but it does the rail belt area. With that rule in place 30 years ago, I would have never gotten in.
Thank you. Representative Ryan, do you have a... Or please continue, and then we'll recognize.
Madam Chairman, what I'll do is to provide the committee members, I think, with maybe just a little sheet that tells you, you know, what will allow you to enlist anymore.
That would be great.
Because it's getting tough.
It'd be real helpful for all of us to have something on paper so we can refer back to it if we have any further questions. Representative Ryan, do you have a question or?
I'm interested, General, and I talked to you at length about the challenge program and Colonel Peterson too. What I'm interested in is how can we assist you on a recruitment, as we call it, recruitment program for the challenge program to expand this field of kids so that we save a little money. We invest a little money here, but we save a whole bunch downstream. We don't have to pay for corrections. And rescue more kids, keep them from winding up in prison. I'm very impressed with this program. It's one of the best things I've seen, and I'd like to offer all support I can towards expanding it. I notice you do have facilities there that, you know, are not housing kids and so forth. You have the capability, so I'd like to kind of know what it would take to do that.
Gary, you want to answer?
Currently, and I sent a message to you on marketing through Carrollton. Marketing right now, our most productive source of new young people coming into the program is prior graduates. That's where most of our assessments come from. They're out back working their own peer groups. We work public service announcements. By National Guard Bureau regulations, we're not allowed to expend monies in the media, specifically recruiting, because we don't want to send a message to young people to drop out of school to join the Youth Corps, and direct recruiting may be seen that way. I suspect is why I'm specifically prohibited from recruiting. We market towards the already dropped out or expelled population. We work very closely with the school counselors that are interested above and beyond. There are a number of them out there. We work very closely with the counselors in juvenile corrections when they assess who may be put on probation that would have volunteered for the Youth Corps. Because one of the prerequisites from National Guard Bureau is that the young person can't be currently legally entangled. And with an open mind, if they're on probation, and probation won't be pulled unless the director directs through the probation officer that be pulled, we consider them not to be entangled. And the counselors, specifically McLaughlin, have had a very good working relationship with working with us, deciding who really should not be held within the walls with the hardcore juveniles that are at McLaughlin, because there are no other options right now for the legal system for the young people. We market with the juvenile law enforcement specialties in the Anchorage Police Department. The smaller communities, of course, don't have the specialty fields. We work with those community groups in different areas, parents of previous graduates, market as best we can. Obviously.
Excuse me.
Yes, ma'am.
What about the VPSO?
Yes, ma'am.
Work
through
with them.
The state troopers. Yes, ma'am. With the numbers that are there this year, there'll probably be over 4,000 alone if you consider dropouts, expellees, and those that'll go 4 years and just not graduate and not come back for the fifth year to finish. We're not having a significant impact on the numbers. We have a significant impact on them that we can get in the door, but the numbers out there lead me to believe that yet there needs to be another means somehow of getting to these young people. Also, obviously, we don't represent an easy way out, and that may be keeping some of them away.
Yes. Well,
we are spending a lot of money in the educational system and in other systems to identify at-risk youth. And it would seem that, to me, that since these funds are being spent, we're identifying people, let's use that as a database for some of these kids that we want to see, if possible. The psychologists talk about them wanting to go to gangs because of a sense of identity you don't find within the family. Well, they find that same sense of identity in your program. They become part of your team. They have goals for which to work, and they get a feeling of self-worth because they're accomplishing something. I don't know how to market this, but I'm not telling you how to do your job, but I'm trying to think about how you can become more inclusive to get more people involved.
We take young people from each class now and export them. I don't have the funds to take young people into the non-Anchorage Matsu Valley area transportation wise on a peer type exposure. Many of the schools in the Anchorage area, Manuska Valley, are working now with us, the counselors. The counselors set up the kids that they know are at risk, and our kids come and talk to them, explain what is a viable option as opposed to totally dropping out. We need to take that the next step farther. I think that is one of the ways to work it at the peer group level and market that out into the places you can't drive to, but that is very expensive.
Representative Joe.
Currently there's legislation out there that would relax some of the juvenile confidentiality restraints, and I'm wondering, should those pass and become law, whether or not that may be an avenue to nip things in the bud, if you will, in terms of when people are forced an option, and maybe forcing them into the program wouldn't be so bad.
The confidentiality rule does come up depending where we're at school wise and who we're dealing with. Some counselors are very reluctant because of the gray area. Are they or are they not committing a violation of the law by referring names to us? And that's a valid concern on their part.
One more, if I may, Madam Chair.
Yes, please.
Is there, especially in the larger communities, I guess maybe Anchorage specifically, and maybe the Matsu Bowl because it's so close to your facilities. Apparently there's a lot of concern, I think not only there, throughout the state, about adolescents, 12 to 16-year-olds, and maybe some lack of discipline, and parents just not being able to get a handle on their children, whether or not this has given any thought to maybe expanding the program to 12 and 16-year-olds to accommodate some of those individuals, that age group.
We have a 4-week test program that we have developed in concert with the Anchorage Police Department. We've not been able to execute that program for lack of funds. And that was through the Anchorage Police Department and the move towards the local area law enforcement. The cop on the beat that went always back to the same community, he would know the kids. He would have the ability to recommend certain children to this, what would be a new pilot program, somewhat based on the existing challenge program. And that's specifically for 12 to 15-year-olds. The municipality has been attempting to get a grant to fund that, but they've not been successful. I was one of Mr. Udland's pet projects as the deputy chief.
What's the cost?
Mr. Mulder. Please.
I don't have that dollar in front of me. I can get it back to you.
Okay, it seems to me that there's quite a few topics of concern here from the individual committee members, and what we'll probably end up doing here is scheduling another hearing, and I'd like to hear from the committee members on what areas specifically that we can approach and work on as far as helping, you know, the youth programs and the drug and alcohol problems that are going on in the state, and how we can help get more youths involved and get them on the right track. So I think that's probably what we'll be looking at here in our future meetings. And at that time, we have meetings that we have to attend here, so our time is getting a little short, but please, Representative Mulder.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. One thing, if I might recommend, or at least request for the General to consider, as well as yourself, Madam Chairman, in the past, every couple years, we've taken a tour of the guard facilities around the state. I believe it's been 3 or 4 years now, and we've gotten a fairly healthy turnover of new members. But what it does is it allows people to really get a firsthand recognition of what the guard means in rural Alaska and how it impacts the lives of the people out there. And it also has been a very beneficial exercise for the posts around the state, because they see that we really do care and we're concerned and we have interaction with them. I've found it to be very valuable, both personally, but also as a means of advocating for the guard when it came to the legislature. So I might recommend that if it's within your purview or ability, that we'd look at doing something like that again this fall.
Okay, we'll make a note of that and follow up with it. That's a good recommendation. And that's what I'd like to see, is more input and recommendations from committee members and how we can work together here as a group on a lot of the problems that we're going to be facing. So if there is no further comments or questions for General Lestenkopf, I appreciate your taking the time to share with the committee the programs and the work that you're doing. And if we have any questions, we can individually contact you. And so thank you again.
Thank you very much. And again, we look forward to seeing you tomorrow, because we have a lot of people in the town.
Okay. Thank you.
Madam General?
The General made some comments regarding the number of employees the Guard has, and drew some correlation with the private sector. I might add that I think the private sector is trying to emulate the success rate of hiring Alaskans that the Guard currently has. They have failed to meet that test up to this point.
Okay. Well, next up on the agenda, we have SJR 7. And we could have the sponsor come forward, or the person who will be telling us about this resolution.
Okay, for the record, my name is Jerry Burnett. I'm staff to Senator Randy Phillips, sponsor of SJR 7. Senate Joint Resolution 7 was introduced to send a strong message of support for the National Guard Youth Corps Challenge Program to the U.S. Congress. You've heard from the General about the need for continued funding. The authorization for this program ends in September this year. And you heard from Gary Peterson about the program itself, so I don't think there's much more for me to say. Go ahead.
I was going to move it if there was no other questions. I'll wait.
Is there any comments, Representative Roachberg?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just asked the Mr. Burmett, there is in the sponsor statement an indication of a line item of an additional $250,000 over and above what's been funded by the federal government in the past. Could you explain the 250 and what the
The state budget, the governor's budget for FY98 includes a $250,000 increment, which is state support, which was put in by, I believe, the governor's, at the recommendation of the governor's cabinet on youth and justice, because of the importance of this program. And the senator has discussed the fact that some other states are contributing state money to this, and it shows more support. As the general said earlier, it makes his job much easier in Washington, D.C. when the state has shown its support for the program.
Do any other?
Yes, go ahead, Representative Mulder.
Jerry, do any other states participate to any other level? I mean, in terms of their programs?
It's my understanding that some states have budgeted this year to participate on a dollar-to-dollar match, as high as a dollar-to-dollar match.
Is that the average, or is that?
I don't know that there's any average, and maybe someone else can answer that question, but it's my understanding that that's the case, that one state has offered to budget that much.
If I may comment.
Yes, General Liston.
Maybe the state support, at least at this stage during the pilot project, is probably an exception rather than the rule. I think there's one state, Mississippi, that matches dollar to dollar, and that's the only state that I really know of right now.
With the match, there's four
with
others that's less than.
There's four others that are less than the match, but I think it's, again, more an exception than the rule.
Okay. I'd also like to recognize we have Representative Ivan here present, too, if you want to. Do you have any questions or okay? Well, is there any more comments or questions, Representative Cotton?
Yeah. Do you know how many other states, and this may be more of a question for the general, that have similar programs, and are we competing for that $20 million?
The answer is there's 21. Other states?
There's a total of 21 that participate in this special program. 15 run a pure challenge program like we do here. The $20 million that I talked about that the Defense Department has put in as a placeholder, really, until authorization comes through, is only about half of the amount that's needed nationally. We feel that $47 million is required to support 15 states. There's a STAR-based program that's a kind of a smaller urban sort of program that they have. It's different than Challenge. Then there's another youth conservation thing, but I think there's a total of 21 that participate in these special type programs. 15 pure Challenge states.
If you would like to stay at the table here, I'm going to move over to the teleconference. We have a couple people that are in line from Anchorage who would like to testify regarding SJR 7. Can we have Alica Porte Thomas? Are you online?
Yes, I'm here.
Yes, if you can please go ahead. We're here listening. Hello?
Hi. Well, I just wanted to say I'm a real strong supporter of the Youth Corps, and I graduated this last class. I am now currently in the Alaska National Guard Youth Corps. Air Guard. I'm sorry. And you'll have to bear with me. I'm a little nervous here.
Okay, that's okay. We're glad to hear you online. Appreciate that. Just go ahead. Thanks.
In fact, in April now, I'm going to boot camp, and I work for the Youth Corps, and I joined the Youth Corps because basically the school system was not working for me, and it was going to take me like 2 or 3 years to finish. And so my counselor decided to talk to me about the Youth Corps. And first he talked to my parents, and then my parents and the counselors talked to me. And I joined it because I figured I wasn't going to finish high school. I really would rather drop out then. While I was going through it, I went through the basic, you know, I didn't want to finish, and, you know, I thought it was too hard for me, you know, my self-esteem was down, and they basically stuck by me and wouldn't let me quit. They told me I could do it, and I ended up graduating, honor graduate, and I was the corps commander while I was in there. And now I work for them. I went through a semester of college. I would have went through another one, but I'm going to a basic training here in April, so I wouldn't have been able to finish it. And I just would like to say I hope you guys support the Youth Corps and funding, and I know for a fact that my cousin's going through the class right now, and I've got family that are going through the next class, and they all believe in it, and we're all supporting it all the way, and I hope that it'll be funded, so when I come back from boot camp, I can support it more and more.
Okay, Ms. Thompson, thank you very much. Is there any questions or comments here from the committee members? Okay, otherwise, appreciate your taking the time, and there is a lot of support for this resolution. Next, we have Ed Earnhardt on.
Good morning, Representative Mason.
Good morning, Ed.
Some of the other members. I haven't seen you in a long time. You might not remember, but anyway, that was years ago. Up in Stuckagan Heights. I came here because I'm on the advisory council for the Youth Corps, and very concerned that we do what we can to get support for it and to be sure it's a good program. And all I've seen so far and all I've heard, it certainly is a good program. Where we get support, I've been especially concerned that the state of Alaska isn't as poor as it says it is, and for us to have limited federal funds coming in every area and a cutdown, I'm wondering if we shouldn't do a little bit more than what the governor put in his budget to say the state is, indicate, so that we can tell the folks in Washington we're coming along too. That's how I feel about it anyway. And I think it'll be very hard, even though I've heard conflicting words, to get very much of that limited federal funds that have come forth here in defense. The second thing is I was told some time ago by people involved in the program that we would have to go beyond the Defense Department to have support. That one of the things that this does certainly is to fill a void in our education system. The failure of the regular education system, we're helping to pick up with the Youth Corps and fill in there. Maybe someday the regular system will be so good that the Youth Corps would no longer need it and people could graduate and then join up with their full diploma and what's needed defense. But in the meantime. Anyway, that's where I'm at, and I've talked to a lot of people, and there's no question about support. And occasionally somebody say, well, it's very costly, but we have figures that show it might be much more costly if we didn't have such a program for these people. So I guess that's about enough of my verbiage here this morning, and I'm open to any questions.
Okay, Ed, I believe there's one person who had some question here. I appreciate your taking the time. Representative Roekberg, please.
Yeah, this is Norm Roekberg. Just want to say hello and thanks for coming to testify, sir.
Oh, it is a pleasure, Norm.
Okay, Ed, well, thank you again, and I hope we'll see you sometimes again. Thanks for testifying in support of SJR 7, and we also have Ed Witcher online who doesn't really necessarily want to testify, but he's there to answer questions or whatever. But I think we're all pretty much familiar with the resolution. So with that, Representative Foster.
Yes, ma'am. I'd like to move out of committee SJR 7 with individual recommendations and the attached fiscal note.
Any objections? Hearing none, we shall pass SJR 7 out of the Military and Veterans Affairs Committee. And I shall keep all the members posted here as far as our future meetings, and if we can get back together with some of your ideas on, you know, what topics we can bring up in our next meeting, that would be really helpful. Representative Jewell?
Just a quick question. I think earlier, General Westlakoff, you mentioned that this Youth Corps may be facing trouble in the House, and you mentioned that there were four committees. What are those committees if people wanted to write to support?
The committees in the House would be the National Security Full Committee in the House, and the subcommittee would be the Appropriating Committee to that National Defense Committee in the House. In the Armed Services Committee in the Senate, the Appropriations Committee in the Senate, and of course the Defense Subcommittee in the Senate would be the that would be the committees in the Senate. Again, I did mention the fact that there is indication there might be some resistance in the House, in the U.S. House, for this thing. From all indications, the U.S. Senate seems to be very, very supportive. All the leadership seems to be supportive of the things.
Thank you.
Okay, and on that point, too, General Lestenkopf, if there's anything we can do with this QDR, please let us know. I'd like to do what we can to ensure that the review will go in favor for Alaska. Okay. Representative Mulder?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The other point that I was just visiting with the Representative Cott about was, I think it is significant to show some, demonstrate some willingness on the state's part to participate in the financing of the program. And it would seem logical to me, to General, that if we, you know, the budgets are going to be difficult this year, especially within Military and Veterans Affairs, because it's such a small amount of general funds anyway, and to try and hold the line or make reductions is difficult. But it would seem logical to me that since we are providing education to the people who are, most of the folks who participate within this program, that it would be a logical extension to fund some of this amount from Department of Education. I know that's going to go over like a lead balloon. On the other hand, it seems perfectly logical to me, because if we don't fund them through the Department of Education or somewhere, I'm going to end up having to fund them in the Department of Corrections budget somewhere down the line.
Well, I was going to suggest it could perhaps be a joint effort. We could have a little bit from corrections, a little bit from education.
Yeah, there you
make
go.
Everybody happy.
I like that.
It's cheap dollars invested, and when you look at what it's going to cost down the line, it's really cheap.
Okay. Okay, hearing no farther business, and this committee is adjourned at 11:25.
I wanted to add that Cott, Masick, and myself are with the budget committee for the veterans and military, so we look forward. We'll be calling a meeting.
Thank you.